So joining us on Pentimental today is Mike Cleland. Mike runs a website called Hidden Experience. It is focused mostly on the intersection between the ET experience and, strangely enough, owls. So I'll leave it at that and let Mike maybe introduce himself a little bit, and then we'll get more in depth to what this is all about. So Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. And there's more going on than just the owls and the UFO contact experience, though that has been kind of a focus lately. And I'm working on a book project right now that's getting, who knows how close it is to being finished. It's sort of a life of its own. But yes, there's something going on. There's an intersection between the UFO contact experience and owls. And it has been a bottomless pit where the problem now is that I've got too much information. I've got too many people contacting with too many amazing stories. Not that I don't want people to contact me and share their owl UFO stories, but it is shocking how they go hand in hand. You know, it's not 100% of the people who see UFOs will also have some odd owl experience. And it's certainly not, you know, people who see an owl won't, you know, then necessarily see a UFO. But there is some overlap there, and I do not understand what it is. So just more questions are being raised than answers. Let me put it that way.
So what motivated you to start your site then? And I guess what is your general focus beyond just the ET owl intersection and kind of what are you trying to accomplish there?
The first blog post goes back to 2009, probably March of that year. And I went to a UFO conference, and I had been dealing with some of my own life experiences that when you look at them and all on a timeline, and some of them have been a bit more impactful than others, and some of them are a little fleeting, but it seems like I certainly would fit into the category of UFO abductee. There was a point when I would have really had a hard time saying that and having it feel honest. At present, it feels honest. I feel like I've kind of had my, you know, whatever the confirmation type events that have erased any doubt in my mind. But so anyway, at 2009, I had not gotten to that point. I was very mixed up, very insecure, very freaked out about the whole thing. But I went to a UFO conference, I'd been to a couple at that point. It's interesting. The conference that I went to is running right now, the first time in like 7 years or something that I haven't gone to the conference. And that would be, it used to be called the Laughlin Conference or the International UFO Congress. And now it's run in Scottsdale, Arizona. So Laughlin, Nevada is where it used to be run. It used to be 8 days long, and now it's run in Scottsdale, and it's 5 days long. Anyway, while I was there, I spoke to a woman named Miriam Delicato and kind of told her some of my experiences and like, what do I do? And I was kind of freaked out, and she was very thoughtful and listened to me very carefully. And then she just kind of said, you need to speak out more. You need to talk about these experiences. She just kind of left it at that. And then when I got home, you know, long drive, I was living in Idaho at the time, and I was driving home from Las Vegas or the Las Vegas area where conferences. So, and as I recall, I think I pulled into my house and I don't even know if I took my coat off. I think I sat right down at the computer and started a blog. And that was the genesis of it. So initially, if you scroll back to the original postings, I think I've got almost 600 postings and stuff now. The initial ones were my own, almost like my own internal dialogue that I transposed to the blog format, where I was like, is this happening? Could this be happening? What's going on? I mean, it's like, you do not have to read between the lines. I was on shaky ground at that point. And then I started doing some audio interviews. And the reason I've started doing audio interviews was 100% self-therapy. There were people I wanted to talk to for my own very selfish reasons. And I figured, well, if I have a blog, a podcast, I can just get those folks online and do an audio interview and ask the questions I need asked for my own reasons. And I had had a bunch of owl experiences where I had seen owls, a very unusual number of owls being way too close and seeing them with the same people and in different places. And anyway, and that went on, that was going on from about 2006. So one of the questions I asked everyone in these audio interviews was, you know, what's going on with these owls? And almost everyone kind of gave the pat answer of like, well, owls are symbolic of wisdom, or owls are noted as a screen memory for UFO contact. And I would say that the owls that I was seeing, I feel very strongly, were not screen memories, but they were real physical owls. They were like an owl size. And I don't know up to speed your listeners are, but there's a term, screen memory, that is used within the UFO abduction research community, and it shows up in any kind of books on the subject. And what will happen is people will oftentimes report seeing unusually large owls. They'll say, there was an owl looking in my window. It was huge, these big black eyes. Or they'll say, I was driving down the road at night, and there was a giant owl standing in the middle of the road. And the next thing I knew, I was arriving home, and it somehow arrived home 3 hours later than I should have. I've heard that story in one form or another so many times that it's very much a part of the UFO abduction lore. It shows up repeatedly. But that's not what I'm focused on. What would be the screen memory? The implication is that there is some sort of hypnotic or telepathic or psychic interaction between what would be quite probably a gray alien and the experiencer who sees the owl. What they're actually seeing, I mean, they're seeing in their mind's eye, they're seeing an owl, but that's not what's in front of them. The implication is that what is in front of them is some sort of gray alien with the big black eyes. So the question originally was, how did I start my blog? And now, what is it, almost 6 years later? Good grief, it's almost going to be 6 years next month that I'll be running this, which seems kind of hurts my brain to think about it, that I've gone that long. And now the blog has been more like an outlet for me to share some of my thoughts, as well as the postings that I'll add there, links to other people's articles, links to videos that I think are important. And I used to do one or two podcasts a month. And I've kind of gotten away from it a little bit, and I need to get back into it. So now it's about one a month, or one every 2 months or so. And that's just my own life has been busy, and I haven't had a chance to keep up with the long list of folks I desperately want to talk to.
I want to ask you about, it sounds to me like you have two ideas about this. Aliens being mistaken as owls, and owls kind of ushering in an alien abduction experience. Like real owls.
Well, owls being mistaken, or aliens being mistaken as owls, I don't think they're necessarily mistaken the same way that, I mean, people are telling of seeing owls. People will say, I had this impulse to like step out onto my back porch, and I walked out onto the back porch, and there in the yard staring at me was a 4 foot tall owl. And now then I can't remember anything else. So under hypnosis, which is totally questionable, and there's reasons to be skeptical of the information that comes out of hypnosis, not to say that it's impossible to glean information out of it. But what will happen is people will say, like, you know, like, okay, I'm stepping out onto the porch. I see the great big owl, but I don't think it's an owl at all. And then they'll realize, you know, in this hypnotic state, that what they are looking at is not an owl, but a gray alien. So that is one aspect of it. Okay. So that's like almost, you can have like one file cabinet on one side of your desk, and that's all the screen memory owl sightings. And then on the other side of the desk is another file cabinet, which I find much more interesting, is people who are seeing real owls. And I do not understand what is all about. The most fruitful avenue of speculation that the thread that I've pulled on that has been the most rewarding is to treat the owl as an archetype. And there is some archetypal reason that the owls are showing up. The owls are showing up the same way that a totem animal would show up. So if, for instance, you were a Native American and you're walking down a path and, you know, a bear walked across your path right at a moment of internal turmoil, you know, the bear would cross your path, and then you would rush to the village shaman and say, you know, there I was walking down the path and I was thinking about these important thoughts, and then this bear crossed the path. And the shaman, who is well versed in the traditions of the tribe, as well as well versed in the goings on of the other world, may offer some advice and say, ah, the totem animal of the bear means this. And then the person might, you know, like the same way you would go to a therapist in modern times, you know, you might go to your shaman in ancient times. Well, the owl is appearing in a way that seems to be like a harbinger of the UFO contact experience. And I don't quite know why they're showing up. I have in my written work speculated all over the map, and I'm quite certain I'm running up a bunch of blind alleys in this speculation. But, you know, for instance, I've got just recently, I got this letter from someone. I'm going to be very cautious because he hasn't given me permission to use his name. But he had been seeing a lot of floating orbs, which is very common for folks to see floating orbs rather than a big metal spaceship. So he's looking up at this floating orb and he realizes there's an owl on the tree branch right near him. And the owl's looking up at the floating orb and he's looking up at the floating orb. So there's an owl and the person looking at the same thing. I've got so many stories of people saying, like, you know, there I was in the, you know, woods and I was looking at this beautiful owl on a tree. It totally surprised me. The owl flew off and the next thing that happened is a UFO flew over. I've got that in one form or another over and over again. I got the other way around where someone will say, like, I was sitting on my balcony and I was looking out and I saw this UFO fly past. And I was like, I moved over to see where it went. And I peeked around the corner and I realized I didn't see the UFO anymore. And this person said something to the effect of, they had this thought like, oh, I want to see my friends. And the next thing that happened is an owl flew by. And then for the next few weeks, this owl hung out on her balcony. You know, I've got that story in one form or another. So, you know, people seeing UFOs and then seeing owls, people seeing owls and then seeing UFOs, people seeing owls and UFOs at the same time. I have one story where a woman is on a beach with her husband and she hears an owl hooting and she's like, oh, where's this owl? I hear an owl hooting. And her husband look around and they look in the trees. They don't see anything and they look straight above them. And there's way up high is a shiny silvery craft like hovering above them. I have people saying, this is actually surprisingly very common, is people will say, I heard owl hooting out my window. Lying in bed, I hear an owl hooting out my window. This is no screen memory because they're not seeing anything really, but they hear the sound of an owl hooting. The next thing that happens is there are gray aliens standing in their bedroom.
You have a lot of these stories piled up. So what would you draw as conclusions? What are some of these speculations that you've come to?
Well, one avenue of speculation, which I think is very interesting and actually surprisingly makes sense, is that – so here, I'll jump back and tell another story. A woman contacted me. We spoke for a long time. She had an amazing classic UFO experience where she was driving down a road. I think it's somewhere in New York. And I think she saw a UFO. The next thing she knows, she's many miles further down the road than she should be. She's well off the highway and she's parked behind some big gravel pile. She had no idea where she was. You know, like there was no break in time. While she's driving, she sees a UFO. The next thing she knows, she's behind this big gravel pile. Well, from that point on, she was flooded with this conversation in her head. And the way she described it, she says, it's from my old ancestors. These are my ancestors and they're all shamans. And she has this amazing story where they were like telling her, you need to be a shaman. You need to follow this shamanic path. And she was like, where is this coming from? Who are you? And these voices would say, oh, we're your old ancestors. And then they said, okay, what we need you to do is we need you to go to the tea aisle at the grocery store. And we want you to go to the tea aisle and we want you to look at every tea box and read the ingredients on every tea box in the aisle in the grocery store. And when she did that, her impression was that she would look at the back and it would say, you know, like, you know, black tea leaves, you know, orange peel and these, she could almost hear the voices in her head going, Oh, thank. And they were, so the implication is there's these disembodied entities that are living in a place where they can't drink tea anymore. And so they just wanted to. So in essence, what was happening is they were seeing through her eyes because they were reading the box through her eyes. So that has shown up in some form or another in a lot of accounts, though that one I thought was really wonderful. So the implication is, could the owls be a kind of camera? If they can do that to this lady, why can't they do that to an owl? Why can't they just put a little psychic zap on the owl, see through the owl's eyes? And on one sense, there is no better animal on earth to be like a ET surveillance camera, right? I mean, owls have great big eyes. They can see in the dark. They're very stealthy. They're very quiet. So for instance, if you saw an owl on a branch outside your window, you know, that's probably possible. And most, you know, that's not that big of a deal. I mean, it's interesting and there's owls are cool to see and it's unusual, but it, you know, wouldn't rock your world in a way. So these owls could be very stealthy. Also, owls have very good hearing, so they could hear what was going on, you know, in a window. So that's one avenue of thought that aliens, that's really cool
as a biological kind of surveillance tool rather than a technological surveillance tool.
And there is no better biological surveillance tool on Earth than an owl, because it has such good hearing and such good vision. And it can follow you around and fly around. And I've had lots of stories of people who've had the UFO contact experience tell of, you know, they say, oh, then one day this owl showed up and it, you know, it followed me for the next 3 years. You know, I would leave the house. I would go to the grocery store. The owl would follow me to the grocery store. I'd come out of the grocery store. The owl would be on a lamppost and would fly home and follow me home. You know, so I hear those kind of stories. So that's one avenue of speculation. It's very interesting. It's very fruitful, but there's weirder stuff going on than that. People have psychic conversations with the owls, and the owls usually kind of give the same message in a way, which is, you know, one of the messages is like, you're not ready. You know, people want to see an ET. This shows up in my research too. People are like, I want to see an alien. I really need to see an alien. I'm going to go walk in the woods alone and I'm going to see an alien. And then they'll see an owl instead. And I have one woman who basically said she had a psychic conversation with the owl, and the owl said, eh, you're not ready to see the SSETs. You know, it'd freak you out. So here we're showing up like this. And that avenue of speculation has been very fruitful. Another thing is that owls have such acute hearing and such acute senses. Could it be that the actual UFO, for instance, like a flying saucer it's an unknown form of propulsion, right? I mean, people say the flying saucers glow orange and then they glow green and then they fly totally silent. And there's all these things that are described that are very unusual, that we don't have craft that can glow orange and fly silently. So some very unusual propulsion system is at play with these craft. Does the owl pick up on it the same way that a dog picks up on a dog whistle? Like if the owl's like in the neighborhood and a UFO is invisible hovering above the house, is the owl just out of pure curiosity just going to show up at the house and say, huh, what's going on? Is the abductee, who has been through some sort of, quite honestly, like transmuting through time or something like that. You know, people often have these very odd experiences where time is distorted or sound is distorted, or they'll come back from a UFO abduction event and they'll blow light bulbs and electronic equipment won't work. I know a lot of abductees who say they can't wear a watch. They're just, the watch breaks. It just stops. It just stops working. You know, so something's going on. Can the owl see that? Can the owl sense that? We can take aura photography. You know, we can just use special camera things and see the heat rising off someone, you know, infrared photography and stuff like that. And is there something the owl is seeing in these people who've had direct contact with the UFO? You know, like some sort of aura that they sense. So once again, I don't have an answer. This is just my own attempt to rationalize what seems completely irrational.
Yeah, I think that's an exciting thing to do. And animals have different intelligences. Owls have always seemed very mysterious to me, and I don't quite know why. I don't know a lot about
owls. They seem mysterious to everyone. I think they seem mysterious to – I'm sure they seem mysterious to cave dwellers, you know, 50,000 years ago. And I'm sure – and I know they seem mysterious now. I've seen a lot of owls. They have such a powerful presence, and they have these weird big eyes, and they don't have a classic bird-like motion, right? You know, so most birds are kind of twitchy and kind of nervous seeming. But owls don't have that. Owls have this very, very calm presence about them. And the, you know, people who train owls and things like that say they are a little on the simplistic side. There's other birds, parrots and ravens are much smarter in a lot of ways than owls. So the wisdom thing comes from Athena, the Greek goddess of wisdom, always had an owl as her companion. So she's, you know, illustrations and sculptures of Athena had an owl with her. Athena is where we get the name Athens. And the Athenian coin from like 300 BC had Athena on one side and an owl on the other, her companion. So the goddess of wisdom had a companion owl. Now this is getting close to, you know, this is well over 2,000 years ago. And we still have owls representing wisdom in the sense that even little kids graduating from, you know, elementary school, you know, when it comes time to go to junior high school, you know, there's funny little owls on the, you know, on their backpacks or whatever. You know what I mean? The little decorations that you put up in an elementary school classroom would have an owl on it. So these things, these archetypes, the kid may have no knowledge at all of Athena and Greek mythology, but there may be an owl with a little graduation cap and a little black gown thumbtacked to the bulletin board in the classroom.
So do owls have any kind of super ability, like a raccoon has the amazing sense of touch?
Owls have, without a doubt, what is probably the most acute sense of hearing of any animal in the animal kingdom. And I think it's the tawny owl, which is a native to the UK. I mean, whatever, Europe and the United Kingdom and stuff like that. We don't have tawny owls here. And they are thought to have the best sense of hearing of any owl or of any animal or vertebrate. Hmm. You know, so I don't know.
And that's very wave related. So I don't know. Frequencies of UFOs are attracting them, perhaps.
Yeah. So the owl could hear something that we don't hear at all. It's estimated that an owl can hear a mouse at a half a mile. An owl sitting in a tree can hear a mouse scurrying under the grass a half a mile away. Hmm. And then fly in the dark and catch that mouse. And then the owls also have amazing night vision. They also have very stealthy, silent flight, which is an odd thing that's a characteristic of a UFO, is reported. The UFO itself has silent flight. That's what people will say. Then oftentimes people will say that, you know, the UFO flew over the house, or I was taking out the garbage and I looked up in the sky and this UFO flew over and it was weirdly quiet. But they don't say that the craft itself was quiet. They'll say that everything was weirdly quiet. They'll say that all of a sudden the cricket noises in the yard or the rustling of the tree leaves was reduced to zero sound. And then when the craft flew off, the sound slowly came back. So owls and UFOs both have silent flight as part of their characteristics. This may mean nothing at all, but I mean, this is just the kind of stuff I'm struggling with or wrestling with, is trying to put this research together into some meaningful form.
And beyond aliens maybe taking over owls, we know from certain shamanic traditions that that's been at least reported by shamans as part of their practice, that they can project their consciousness into the bodies of other animals to maybe, again, sense where they're migrating for the winter, in case they're a semi-sedentary or nomadic people, so they can keep up with their food supply. So in that sense, you know, utilizing biological technology beyond, say, plant life and other technologies around them, that was one pathway of access to information that nowadays we try to use all other kinds of external technologies that we make from scratch instead of being in a symbiotic relationship with nature. And so in that sense, again, tying shamanism, ET, and the owl together, that is a idea of awakening, like a spiritual awakening or something akin to that. And in so many instances, the ET experience is kind of traumatizing, but other ones are described either maybe more innocently or something actually profound is triggered in the person that experiences it. So, I mean, I guess what percentage of these would you categorize as a spiritual or something resembling a shamanic archetypal awakening, or do you draw a line between those two things? How do you differentiate?
Well, I mean, the classic shamanic initiation in some parts of the world is very brutal. You know what I mean? They, you know, on some level, they would take the initiate who does not volunteer for the role. The elders in the tribe will choose the next shaman, and they'll drag that, usually a child, off into a cave. And then, you know, in some sense, there's some reports of native traditions where they will beat the child to the edge of death, and then they'll come out of the cave. And then, so they'll have a, you know, like a metaphoric death and rebirth, you know, maybe played out through, you know, a sweat lodge or ceremonial dancing or something like that. But, you know, sometimes it's actually played out where they will take the initiate and almost kill the young initiate and put it through powerful trauma. And that is the same thing that's reported by some people who've been, you know, had the UFO contact experience. Horrible, traumatizing stuff has been reported. Really scary, freaky stuff of, you know, being on the operating table. And I mean, I've had, you know, there's written reports of people looking down and realizing their body's been chopped up into different pieces. And then the aliens are putting all the pieces back together. Is that some sort of projected virtual reality, or were they really chopped up into small pieces and put back together? I don't know. You know, my sense is that would be some sort of theatrical presentation, though I can't answer that in any meaningful way. And then sort of the benign, I've been looking at the numbers, and actually there's an organization called FREE, and I wish I remember, FREE, mm-hmm. Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters, I think is what it is. And I think you can look that up online. It's free.co. Excuse me, it's experiencer.co is the way to look it up. I think if you looked free experiencer, it would come straight up. But they just did some preliminary research. And, you know, one of the questions they asked was, you know, has this been benign or has this been terrifying? And it's about 60-40 weighted towards the kind of love and light side of things. That doesn't mean that, you know, that wins and that's what the experience is. That just means that there's a big divide where some people have terrifying experiences and some people have blissful experiences. Some people will begin with terrifying experiences and end with blissful experiences. Some people, they'll be all mixed up. And then also folks who have had this contact experience are often very highly psychic, highly spiritual, highly sensitive about the natural world. You know, it's almost a thing that I've met so many people who said they started taking up Reiki healing. So people like doing hands-on healing, or I guess Reiki is hands-off healing. That doesn't really touch, they don't usually touch the person. So that people would do hands-on energy healing or some sort of Reiki therapy. That's a very odd statistic that I've never had anyone follow up on, the number of Reiki healers that are probable UFO abductees. And then every questionnaire that's been written up by a UFO researcher always has the question, you know, how would you rate your psychic skills? Or most people who've had the contact experience will say they are either have had psychic events or that they're highly psychic, which is the same thing I guess you would say of a UFO abductee as well as a shaman. They would be highly psychic. Another odd thing is, a lot of shamanic experiences will depend on, at one point in the shaman's life, having a near-death experience. So there's a death and rebirth experience that's literal. You know, it's not like a metaphoric thing where they take you to the cave or the sweat lodge and perform some ceremony. I mean, this is, you know, people who have actually died. And then I've actually met UFO abductees who have also had the near-death experience. And those people are off the charts psychic. And I don't know anyone who's really followed up on that, but you know, that combination, UFO contact, near-death experience, you're interacting with someone who's quite probably extremely psychic.
So in these cases, do you lean towards, okay, we're going to inner space and encountering these entities, whether they have a ontological or real existence to them one way or another? Or do you think it's interplanetary? Do you think it's some mix because we have these external reports of ships in the sky or crash landings and this recovered technology or whatever? But then we have these also hyper-spiritual or dreamlike, maybe somewhere intersecting symbolic type of things that also have some objective quality to them because people come out with either like, you know, scars or something to signify that they've been somewhere else and experienced something, even though it's not as obvious as other blatant abduction experiences. So I guess, what is the distinction between those? Have you sorted that out, or is that just a big question mark at this point?
It's a big question mark. And I mean, as anyone who first picks up their first UFO book just assumes that it's like, oh, it's aliens from another planet. I mean, there's sort of a logic, it's a very simple deduction to come to that conclusion. The problem is that these events – this is Nick Redfern says this, and I really think this is a great way to look at it. You know, it's not just that the UFO contact experience is weird. It's too weird. It's weird in a way that, you know, little scientists in a metal spaceship that no longer fits because the experiences themselves get so bizarre that are reported. And another, actually, Anne Streber, Whitley Strieber's wife, will say she has a, you know, her BS detector. You know, she knows people are like, if people are making something up, because if it makes sense, you know, she's doubtful. And basically she says, if it's not so weird that it doesn't make any sense, then she doubts the people. These experiences are come from almost a dream logic at times. So yeah, that's difficult to answer. Now there, it may be partially somehow beings from another planet, and that may hold some of the answers, but not all of them, I think. It may be some blending of that. I think, my question is, you know, like if you have a UFO contact experience, you know, who do you call? Do you call like a UFO researcher? Do you call like a shaman? Who is better suited to offer help? Someone who's going to talk about the spiritual aspects of something that's beyond the veil. That's what the shaman does. They access these other realms. Or would it be someone who would go out into the backyard and measure the burn mark with a tape, take their notebook and write down that number? Pragmatic number, you know, they would write down how big the burn mark is in the backyard, and they could write very pragmatic quantitatable things, like what time did it happen? You know, and then they could put a number and that would correspond to a clock. And men, this is very interesting. I get a lot of grief for this, but my sense is that men, this is oversimplifying it greatly, are very much the nuts and bolts side of the equation. They want facts and times and data and charts. And women are much more comfortable in the emotional, the spiritual, the sensitivity, the implication side of things, and don't depend on that. And if you go to a UFO conference, there are two totally separate camps, and saying it's men on one side of the room and women on the other is oversimplifying, because it's simply not true, but it's sort of true. And so I guess the original question was, you know, is this a spiritual experience that involves accessing other realms? And my answer would be yes. And then the other way to address that would be anyone who has had these types of experiences where they are confronted with something so illogical and something so out of the bounds of what they were taught in high school physics, let's say, or what the New York Times defines reality as, that you are confronted with something so traumatically bizarre that you are, from that point onward, you know, that cosmic egg has been cracked, right? So you're no longer the same person you were, because the trapdoor has opened out from under you, and you have to go through that falling, that plummeting into doubts and insecurities and questioning. And I think those are important parts of anyone's spiritual experience. And the UFO contact experience forces the individual or the initiate or whatever term you want to use, the experiencer or the abductee, it forces them to wrestle with the really big questions. You know, one thing I say is, oh, it's the thinking person that will start talking about UFOs. You know, so two people having a conversation about UFOs, and if they don't very early in that conversation jump to the very deep questions, you know, who are we? Why are we here? What does it all mean? Then they are missing something in what the UFO, the message of the UFO is. If they are stuck in what's the size of the burn mark in the yard, or does it happen more in Nevada or California, then they're missing the deeper message.
What skews it for me, at least in my selective reading of the phenomenon or whatnot, leaning towards it being more of a spiritual awakening experience versus an external, they're visiting from another planet experience. At the same time, I entertain both, but I lean, and I can't help that as a human being. So I lean in that direction because, again, a lot of these are accompanied by synchronicity. And so synchronicity period, whether you're talking about it in the context of an ET experience or something completely different, it does seem to accompany sort of awakening experiences coming out of that dark night of the soul. And it almost acts as a bridge, a strange sort of synchronistic bridge between, again, that invisible, unseen dimension and then our waking reality. And the ET experience is so much like that, that they go hand in hand. That's how I feel. And have you seen that in your own research too?
Well, I mean, that's one of the questions I ask is, have you had a heightened amount of synchronicities in your life? When I talk to people who have had the UFO contact experience, I've sort of stopped asking it at this point because I know the answer. They'll just roll their eyes and they'll say, oh my God, I've had so many profound synchronicities that it defies all rational explanation. It's magic. Something has intersected with my life that is creating these thunderously intense synchronicities. And that would certainly be true of my life. It has calmed down a little bit now. And I think the reason it's calmed down in a funny way is that I'm kind of at the point now where I don't need anything proved to me. Mm-hmm. Like I don't need like a synchronistic, powerful experience to say that there is a phenomena at play that is very profound. I know that's taking place. I'm very confident saying that. And
well, I would feel remiss not to ask you about your confirmation event while we have you here, because I think that that story is your personal story. And I'd like to hear you kind of retell that.
Now, so have you, there's a video online. I'm not sure. And I've definitely written about it. It took place March 10th, 2013.
Yes.
So you're familiar with the story?
Yes, I'd like to have you talk about it, though.
Okay, good. So to tell it properly would take 45 minutes. So I'll tell it. I'll kind of race through it a little bit. So I was coming home from a UFO conference. I had at that point had enough experiences in my life that I should have been very comfortable saying like, oh, I'm probably a UFO abductee. I wasn't. I had had all those experiences, but man, I'll tell you, it is a big leap to jump off that cliff. So I was shaky. I was insecure. I couldn't come to terms with it. If I did say it, if I said it out loud, like I am a UFO abductee, it didn't feel honest. So I wouldn't say it. I would go around the block, I would say. And I even did it at the opening of this thing. It's like, well, I have the experiences that, you know, might put me in the category possibly of someone who could have in one way or another had a UFO contact experience, maybe. And I like have to walk around the block three times to get that out. So coming home from a UFO conference, this would have been the conference that takes place every February. It's taking place right now. And I think it ran until a little over that year. So 2013, driving home, I was living in Idaho. The conference was in Arizona. If you can look at a map, you got to drive through Utah. So I love driving through the desert and stuff like that. I picked these little teeny roads and I wanted to drive on wonderful back highways and stuff. So, and I spent a lot of time outside and such like that. So I feel very comfortable just pulling off the side of the road. I have a great big thick winter sleeping bag, a great big thick pad, and no hotel. I just got tired. I pulled off to the side of the road. This is in dusty middle of nowhere, Utah. It's actually, between Beaver and Cedar City on Highway 20. Someone could look that up. Pulled off to the side of the road. I had actually, I think I remembered that road being pretty and I had never slept there, but I was like, I'm going to sleep there. So I pull off, the sun is down. It must be about 9 o'clock at night or so. Cold, you know, it's March, early March, freezing cold. So I pull off, it's a great spot. I lay down. It's nice and warm in my sleeping bag. I think I fell right asleep. A little while later, I woke up. I did not look at a clock at any point. So it's not like I pulled out my watch and looked at what time it is. So I don't know what time it was. I went to bed around 9, woke up, and I look on this hillside nearby, and I say to myself, that looks just like a landed flying saucer. And sure enough, like up on this hill is like this round structure, and it had lights around the edges of it. It was up on this hill. It looked big. And my thought was like, oh, that looks like a house, like a trophy home. Like someone had built like a Malibu trophy home here in southern Utah, and they put it up on top of this hill. And I looked at it, and it kind of looked like a landed flying saucer. And I said to myself, hey, listen, I'm super psychic. I've got all these intuitive senses. I feel like I'm pretty dynamic in that sense. And I feel like if this was a UFO, I would know it. I would totally know it. So I kind of just tapped into my inner quiet side and just said, okay, nothing. I felt nothing at all. Zero, zilch. Every little like psychic knob was like at zero. And I'm like, okay. So I rolled over and went to bed, and I woke up a little while later. There it was again. And at that point there was a coyote howling really close. And I was like, oh, okay, this coyote's howling. This thing's right there. I mean, like really close. I mean, at that point I'd lived out west for like 25 years and so I'd heard a lot of coyotes. I'd never, ever heard one that close. It seemed like I could almost take a little dog biscuit and just toss it like underhand, you know, like just whoop. And this coyote could catch it in its mouth. I never saw it. There was kind of sagebrush and bushes around it. It felt like it was like I could almost pet it. I wasn't scared at all. I went back to sleep. A little while later, I woke up again. There was a light on the other side of this bush. If it was a car, it didn't seem like a car. It didn't seem like anyone with a flashlight. And I couldn't see on the other side of this bush. And so there was a light there, and I went back to sleep. Now so I woke up again and then just said, oh, I feel refreshed. I'll just start driving. And I got in the car and I don't actually remember looking up on the hill to see if that round structure, what I thought was a round home, was up on the hill, which I had seen three separate times that night very clearly. And I'm laying there. I must have stared at this thing for a half hour at times.
Were the lights on it? Were they symmetrical or were they, did
you know,
they,
curiously,
were they made out
they
more
were,
like a.
Yeah, it would be like, curiously, they were slightly off symmetrical, which I thought was unusual. So it seemed like, and I did an illustration of it that I kind of used the computer. So actually someone said like, oh, how did you get that photograph? And I'm like, that's not a photograph. I just did that using Photoshop. So you imagine a saucer, you know, two saucers, you know, one on top of each other. And right along that seam along the edge was these little dots of light, but they weren't perfectly symmetrical. They were kind of spaced a little herky jerky. I got
so
up.
So you didn't see it in the morning?
You know, I don't
remember. You don't remember looking for it?
I don't remember. It was still dark out when I started driving. Yeah. And here's another thing. It was actually, that was, if you look up in the time, that was the day the time change takes place in spring. So I remember getting in the car and like my clock, I was listening to the radio. I'm like, what the heck? What's going on? They're like telling it's time and this doesn't match my clock. And I was totally like, oh God, this is, and then I realized, oh no, no, this is daylight savings. So I had this kind of like, oh God, it's something went down. The time's all screwed up. And my time's all, you know, crazy, weird, missing time event, but it wasn't. It was the clock didn't match because it was just, the time change was that morning. So I get home, I look up online, I try to figure out if there was a building there. You know, this building was as big as it seemed to be. It would have to be, there would have to be, and I'm very, very skilled with maps. It would, you know, would be huge. Need a road to be up there. There'd need to be telephone lines going up there and nothing. I could see exactly where the meadow was. It was just, you know, a little cute, pleasant meadow of sagebrush according to the satellite imagery. And I'm like, well, this came from a couple of years ago. Maybe someone just built something. I have since been back to that same exact spot. There is no building. But at that point I had just driven away and then I got home to my house and then tried to do a little research. Now it was actually not that day, but the next day I was walking in my house. So I was like standing by my desk and then I was suddenly struck with this psychic flash. I had a very clear vision in my mind of a map of southern Utah with a straight line. And three dots on the straight line, like three push pins on the straight line, like you would. And I created maps using Google Map program. So I just sat right down on my desk and I knew exactly where the westernmost dot was. And that would have been the event that had taken place 48 hours earlier, or maybe less than 48 hours earlier, would have been at that spot on Highway 20 in southern Utah near Beaver or Cedar City. I think it's between those two towns. And then the other location was an event that happened in the spring of 2010. And I was with this woman, Natasha, and we met at a UFO conference. I want to be very careful what I say because she doesn't feel that she has had contact experiences and I trust her on that. But I will say she's had a lot of odd experiences in her life. So we were camping out in a tent. I'll make this one short because to tell the story properly takes a half hour. So something happened in the tent. We both woke up screaming. I remember floating. I was in this white realm. She remembers seeing a face. There was all kinds of odd things that took place that night. And I woke up that morning and had a big scratch across my chest. And the next day when we woke up, we left that campsite and we were like, wow, what happened last night? You know, and I remember walking around our tent, like looking for a spot on the ground where like a UFO would have left a burn mark. This is actually technically in Colorado, right across the border from Utah. It was near a town called Dolores, Colorado. Curiously, my friend Natasha had studied with Dolores Cannon. So Dolores C is where Dolores, Colorado is where we had camped, and Dolores Cannon, who's she had studied with, studied hypnosis. And then we eventually went and saw a shaman in the Navajo reservation at a sweat lodge. It was an amazing experience. Really wonderful. Not like life transforming or anything like that, but I found it really, really enjoyable and super cool experience. So
those are what you would consider your two most kind of prominent.
Yeah, there's a few others, but those are the two most prominent that I just shared. And so if you put a line in a map, right? So you have two, you have an easternmost line dot, which is Dolores, Colorado, and you have the westernmost dot, which is the event that took place on Highway 20 on March 10th, 2013. And then if you make a perfectly straight line between the two, I was like, okay, in my vision, there were three dots. So I was like, where is this other thing? Where's this? And then I realized, oh, I actually was camping with Natasha the following year. That would have been 2011. I think that would have been March of 2011. We were actually at the conference and we came home together, or she drove back to my house in Idaho and we camped on the side of the road on the Burr Trail Road, just outside of Boulder, Colorado. Excuse me, Boulder, Utah, sort of in the middle of the lower part of southern Utah. It's a little town called Boulder, Utah, and there's a thing called the Burr Trail Road. We're camped there, and I had been driving all day, and it was nighttime, and it was a beautiful, calm night, and this great road, and it was the coolest spot imaginable. It's just amazing, and it was cold, and just trillions of stars, and absolutely quiet, and I had been driving most of the day, so I was tired. Natasha had jet lag. She's from Germany, so she was wide awake. And I just remember she was like, Mike, what do I do? And I'm like, oh, take a walk. And she took a walk on this road, and it was the safest place imaginable. It's amazing that how the stars look there. She was saying, as she was walking down the road, she was actually sparkling. She said, I felt so electric. I was sparkling. And then she saw something. She saw an orb, a floating orb. At first, she thought it was someone with a flashlight. She kind of walked up to it, and it was instead just a floating orb there, and then it went poof and disappeared. And it scared her. And she ran back to me where I had been lying and said, Mike, we got to leave. And then she told me the story, and we drove off. Now, as I was lying there kind of in this kind of peaceful, blissful way. It was just gorgeous. But there was an owl in a tree right behind me. And just like that coyote story I told earlier, where the coyote was so close, but I didn't see it. This owl was so close, hooting away. And it was a great horned owl. They have an unmistakable call. Now, I'm describing something visual, and I'm describing it verbally. So when I put the spot where, which I'm very good with maps, I knew exactly where I was lying in the turnoff along the Birch Trail Road. When I put a push pin on that spot using the Google Map program and zoomed out a little bit, I realized I was sleeping exactly on that line. So that line is 231 miles long. Between Highway 20 and Dolores, Colorado. In the middle, approximately, is where Natasha saw the orb and I listened to the owl. So there's just the convergence of all these things. And I have to say that these clues were set up specifically for me. I mean, obviously there are other people out there who are kind of nerdy with maps, and I certainly am. But these clues were set up in a way that it felt like I was the only person who could solve this, right? I mean, this thing with the maps and the locations and the, and when I realized that the center pushpin, the center dot on this straight line lined up exactly. I mean, like you can zoom in and make that line one pixel thick and you can get right in to see the, you know, the bush on the ground where the owl was. It is so precise that when I realized the precision of the map, all doubts of my experiences just melted away. At that point, I was no longer the person I once was. Like the person I once was someone like, maybe I've had these weird experiences, but it's kind of in this place of denial and I can't go there. That ended. Like poof, gone. And I was a new person. I was like, oh God, this is real. This is real. This really happened. And these elements, I mean, on one end, you know, I had the coyote howling near me. And the other end, I had this shamanic experience with a sweat lodge right afterwards. And in the middle one, I had this owl hooting. Now, here's another little odd detail. So that one event took place on March 10th, where I saw the round structure. And the other two events both took place with this woman named Natasha, the one in the middle and the one at the far eastern edge. March 10th is Natasha's birthday. That's a weird little detail. And then it's like all of them took place on a new moon. All of them. So I was just at that point, the chatter, the spinning tape loop in my head that had been incessantly since about 2007, 2008, that had been spinning in my head, unrelenting, going, this could have been happened. Could be real. Maybe it's not real. Could be real. It's kind of, maybe you can go there. Let's better not to look at it. Better not to deal with it. But maybe it did happen. That wishy-washy sense of not knowing just disappeared. Like poof, now I know. And then I had a bunch of like blog posts after that where I very clearly said, whoa, this thing that happened to me then, now I can look at it a little more pragmatically without getting lost in that tape loop. Without getting sidetracked by my own denial. And I connected a lot of dots very quickly after that. So yeah, so there was a long story. I talked and feel free to ask any questions, but that was what I refer to as my confirmation event.
My immediate question is if you would extend that line all the way through the globe.
Oh, I tried that. I tried, figured out and nothing happened. It's nothing it's happened. Confined to those three little spots. And believe me, I was like, oh gosh, if it goes this way, does it go? I was like, does it go through Area 51?
Is it a path?
No, it didn't. You know, it goes the other way. It's like, oh, does it go through like, you know, what's the place in Georgia where they have the Guidestones? Yeah, does it go through the Georgia Guidestones? And it didn't. You know, so, but I tried to, like, believe me, and it was interesting because I knew how that line was going to play out when I saw it in that psychic vision. And then I kind of like recognized that, like, I'm going to go through the process of digging there and looking in those other directions. But I kind of knew that I wasn't going to find anything. I mean, who knows? It may go through the pyramids if you wrap around the earth a couple of times. And, you know, I was waiting for it to go through Easter Island or something like that. And it never did. Not for lack of trying. So,
but sometimes it's the unassuming places where these things happen, as was your case in the, you know, southwest or southeast corner of Utah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was, so, I mean, at the time, Yeah. I mean, that's so.
And what's going on along that line, we may just not know about.
maybe. But at this point, you know, I don't think I needed anything more at that point. You know, like the synchronicity fairies, you know, didn't need to hammer anything home. Like they had already rung the gong, you know, so.
Yes.
So you just brought up fairies there. More recently, I've noticed on your site that you have posted a video on fairies. So is that something you've been digging into more, or what's your interest in that subject matter and what's it telling us?
I don't have much interest in fairies at all, except that they kind of show up. You know, they show up in the written work of Jacques Vallée. And, you know, there's a woman, her name is Adrienne Dumas. She's has her own podcast that she doesn't do very often. She's like so love and light. I've spoken to her on the phone. She has a bunch of odd owl experiences, and that's the reason I talked to her. She's got this incredibly sweet sort of sing-songy voice, but she's had a fairy experience. I know a handful of people who have had fairy experiences where they basically said, yeah, I saw this fairy flying around, and they all describe it the same way. They said it looked like as if it was made out of nature, right? So it wasn't like a little Disney Tinkerbell with a little tutu on. You know, it looked like it was made of dry leaves. And that was interesting. So it's like this very sort of nature spirit thing. So yeah, so I don't have any, I'm not locked into the fairy. I thought that fairy documentary was great though. That's worth watching. It's posted, it was probably a couple months ago. I posted that online. It's about an hour long. It's totally worth watching. There's one guy who tells a story about seeing a fairy in Scotland that's just so great. He tells about like basically hearing music and he's off alone, and there's two fairies, one at his foot trying to lift his toe up, if I remember this correctly, and another fairy like taking his shadow and rolling it up like it was a carpet. So as the shadow that he was casting, like one was pulling it away from his foot like they were trying to take his shadow, like it was a rug. Very wild story.
I think John showed me that video.
Yeah, when I was visiting, I just showed you that one. That exact
yeah, it's
one.
Great.
That's an amazing,
so great.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah. That story alone is worth watching. I think I even put the time count on it. I say, if you only watch one little segment, watch this guy.
And I guess why that especially caught my attention was my touchstone book for this subject matter is Supernatural by Graham Hancock. And I don't know if it's necessarily his work or John Mack's work, but he starts drawing parallels between the ET experience or the shamanic reflection of that experience to fairy stories and how there are, again, it's a lot of obvious superficial differences. I mean, these are not even the same entities, quote unquote, but as far as people being taken to odd places, whether they be spaceships or caves or whatever, and they are operated on one way, shape or form, or forced to mate with kind of cross species mating and these sorts of themes that repeat themselves quite often. So it's interesting to even entertain the cross pollination between those two phenomena. It's one really just a reflection of a over technologized society. And really, what is the difference between any of these besides the superficial is there? And I think there probably is, but at the same time, the overlap, I can't help but be intrigued by that.
Absolutely. I agree. I mean, I'm totally thunderstruck by it. And that's what I'm finding in this owl research is that, you know, like, wow, you know, like there's this, you know, like there's a, you know, people see, I've got stories of people, you know, one guy in Hawaii is meditating and he's his very first time meditating. He's like, I should try meditating. So he sits on his porch and he closes his eyes and he's like, has this really pleasant experience. And he opens his eyes and there's an owl standing in his yard. And then from that point on, he's has this life altering thing where he's like open to, you know, basically it sounds like he was open to a lot of conspiracy thought and no UFOs at all. But here's this owl that shows up when he's meditating and he has this kind of life altering experience. Another person sat down to meditate and basically said, you know, like, I want to learn if you're benevolent and you're wonderful, like I want to meet you. And then he closes his eyes, he meditates, he opens his eyes, and there's an owl in front of him. So where those don't have anything to do with UFOs, but they kind of fit the same feel of these UFO owl stories.
It's sort of a close to final question, maybe unanswerable, but we'll swing for the fences with it. I mean, what is the meaning of all this? What do you think this is pulling humanity towards, or the people who experience this? What is it pushing them towards? It's a 60-40 between light and dark, but can both be compelling us towards some sort of, I've heard the idea that there's an aspiration towards convergence. And so if these are extra dimensional beings and we're on this other plane, that the universe in its entirety would only want to converge with itself. So these, this kind of whatever cross-dimensional interaction is some sort of reflection of that larger process. And I guess philosophically that gels well with me, but at the same time, I mean, have you put that in any framework, or do you just not even think about it?
Oh, I think about it. Yeah. Oh gosh. I'm wallowing around in existential angst, you know, half the time trying to make sense of this stuff. So this is the simplest explanation I have for it. So like basically owls and synchronicities and UFOs all kind of play the same role, right? So owls, synchronicities, UFOs, they're on one sense. Well, obviously they're not the same thing, right? They are not the same thing, but they all play the same role in people's lives, or they can.
Mm-hmm.
So they can have a profoundly, they can change people. Someone can have a synchronicity so profound that it changes their life direction. Someone can have an owl sighting so profound that it forces them to look at things reality different. Someone can have a UFO sighting that's so profound that it forces them to become a deeper thinker, let's say. And so I'm treating this research in a way that like a thought experiment, you know, like what if these things are the same thing? So I'm trying to treat them as the same thing and see what the impact that they're having on people's lives. And what I'm finding is this stuff is just all intertwined and so tightly knotted that I can't separate one from the other anyway. So the simplest definition for the owls and the role they are playing is that they are alarm clocks. Some people can wake up with just a little teeny gentle tone. And that may be someone's owl experience. And some people need a, you know, a loud clanking bell that jolts them out of sleep. And that can be, you know, the more powerful owl experiences that I've had people have, you know, or that I've heard from folks. So if the owl is an alarm clock, the implication is to wake up. And what is that waking up? I mean, that's an open-ended question itself, but I feel like to waking up to the fact that there is a grander and deeper reality at play. Are we tapping into the God consciousness? Are we, you know, peering beyond the veil to where the, you know, the interdimensional aliens are, you know, holding court, you know, or is it just a deeper sense of knowing of your own best self in a way? I don't have an answer to it, but there is, I'm convinced there's more going on than we've been taught in high school physics class. I feel that there is something deeper at play, and these owls seem to be playing the role of alarm clock and waking folks up. So my owl experiences, which I had in a flurry, oh my God, in 2006, 7, and 8, and 9, it was off the charts. I was seeing owls. So it was crazy. It was out of control. And that was the alarm clock in a way, trying to wake me up. And it forced me down this road of self-reflection. It forced me to, I mean, if you look at my very first blog posts or first couple, they're about owls. And they're just stories that I had never applied any kind of UFO context to them. So yeah, so owls as alarm clock, waking people up, you know, what are you waking up to is debatable, but I feel that there's a need for humanity to, and you know, waking up is just as much a metaphor as anything else in this stuff. So.
And that's great. I really like how your experience has not just humans and aliens in it. And I mean, there are many other creatures out there. And in some ways, most of the stories that I hear about UFOs are just humans and aliens. And, you know, we're all creatures here on the spaceship Earth, and there's other creatures out there. And I love that the palette in your experience kind of taps into other creature intelligences right nearby us that we may consider just as alien. And
exactly.
I think that brings another dimension to it that helps, maybe it's not understand it, but see it with more possibility.
Sure. A wider view rather than a myopic, you know, you're looking through the wrong end of the telescope in a way. If you only look at UFOs as being metal spaceships from some other planet.
Yeah,
because there's such a rich, wide tapestry of other stuff, and that tapestry has threads that connect everywhere. there's a guy out there writing a book on UFOs and food. And he's like, he contacted me ages ago and was like, gee, you know, like I'm thinking of writing this book on UFOs and food. And my advice to him was like, watch out, man. Like, get ready. You're going to get flooded with stuff. There's going to be unending. I think someone could write a book on UFOs and deer. I'm not going to write it. I'm like, this is like, it doesn't match my direct experience, but there's like the UFO and deer. I mean, deer have their own archetypal power and stuff like that. So, you know, my joke is that someone could write a book on UFOs and shoelaces, and then, you know, they would find a zillion amazing shoelace stories involving UFOs. I don't think that's, I'm being purposely kind of provocative by saying that. I don't think that's actually how it's going to play out, but you know, there's something about this thing that has got this kind of electric zap to it, you know, where anyone who does, you know, let's say I've talked to a lot of people who've written books about UFOs and they all say the same thing. They're like, oh my God, how do you rein it in? It just goes all over the map. It just like the spider webs go everywhere.
Okay, Mike. Well, you mentioned in the beginning that you might be tying some of this into a book. Is there anything you want to tell us about that or tell us about how your webpage is going to be going in the future?
You know, I don't see much different going on with the webpage. I know I would love to do some more podcasts. It seems like I've sort of like stepped away from that a little bit. The book is, you know, so here's what's happening. Now, like I just wrote years ago, actually, I put out a little call on the blog, which is, you know, I said, if anyone has any interesting owl stories, get a hold of me. And then I, you know, kind of really started doing them. And then so, you know, so if you Google UFOs and owls, my name is going to come up. So if you're like in New Zealand and you had an interesting UFO owl story, all you got to do is like, you know, I'm one Google click away. You type in UFOs, owls, I'm going to come up. And so people reach out to me. People find me if they've had these experiences. This wouldn't have been possible 10 years ago. 10 years ago was right at the dawn of the internet really functioning in that kind of way. And now it seems so second nature just to Google something. And then so consequently, what's happening is I'm at the receiving end of a lot of owl stories. They're coming in at about one a day. Like I'm getting one really good UFO owl story a day. So that's like 365 really good stories I've received in the last year. It's madness to try to think I could put all these stories in a book, and all of them are worth it, you know, being in a book. Wow. And I mean, then, you know, whatever, a 900 page book is not going to do anyone any good. But so I'm trying to be like, I realize I have a responsibility to this topic because it is so real. Like, I mean, people are telling me these stories in absolute earnesty. I've got so many pictures. People are like, oh, I'm a UFO abductee. Here's a picture I took in my backyard. And it is like an owl, like 3 feet away from the lens of the camera. I've got a file on my desktop here with like so many of these amazing owl photos that are like, oh, yeah. And I just had my phone with me and this owl like showed up in my garage, you know. So I'm looking actually sort of forward to the place when I can like sort of like step away from it and go, phew, okay, the owl thing is. But I think I'm obviously the owl guy, which is fine.
You're in too deep now.
I'm stuck being the owl guy, and that's fine because it's a fun project, and I'm totally engaged and excited to be doing this. But the problem is reining it in. Like as I said, I don't want to write a 900 page book. Whatever. There's no such thing as like a best selling UFO book. I mean, maybe Whitley Strieber's Communion. Well, that actually qualified as, but you know, whatever. I'm going to publish a book. I feel like the book as it is now, like I'm happy with it, and it just needs to be whittled down a little bit and edited down because it's just kind of madness. It's just all over the map a little bit, and I just got to clean it up and just get a little more focused, and it'll be done.
And it's a collection of reports?
It's a collection of reports. There's a chapters on owl physiology because the owls actually have really interesting physiology. It's a collection of my own experiences. It's a collection of reports. I mean, I got the weirdest stuff. You know, people, I was getting one report one day. Someone would have a report and they saw an owl from a hammock. And the next day I would get a report and someone saw a UFO from a hammock. I was lying in my hammock and saw a UFO. And the day before I got to, you know, talk to someone for an hour and she told me this long, elaborate story about lying in her hammock and seeing owls, and she was a UFO abductee, and this other UFO abductee contacts me and she's seen, you know, UFOs from a hammock. And so these stories were coming in and I've organized them hopefully in a way that I make my point. So it's a little bit all over the map. I'm trying to be very open. I mean, some of them are very, very bizarre. You know, people like channeling owls and people seeing, you know, owls. You know, that one story that I told you about the woman who went into the woods hoping to see an ET, instead saw an owl, had a telepathic conversation with the owl, and the owl basically said, yeah, you're not ready to see us, the ET.
Yes, so you have to include those.
Oh yeah, I got to include it. Even though, there's some that I don't want to say skeptical of, because that's the wrong way to put it. Obviously I'm not going through and like, you know, hiring a, you know, lie detector technician to test all these people. And another thing that I'm being very cautious to do is not have any one-off stories. If there's a story in this book, it's going to have pattern behind it, you know. So I may tell the most striking story, but there'll be at least a couple of other ones that have the same mood or the same theme or the same details. So yeah, so I'm hopefully, knock wood, you know, like it'll be out this summer. Deadlines have a way of racing, like they're unreal. You can't quite say this summer, it might turn into who knows when, but the book itself.
You will keep us up to date on the website when it's
I've been totally open about it. Yeah. And in fact, I've been posting little excerpts from the book and stuff like that. So every once in a while, there's a little excerpt of it. You know, this recently, I just posted one from a philosopher, English philosopher, Mary Migley. I think I might be pronouncing her last name incorrectly. And she wrote a book called the Owls of Athena or something like that. And it was a book on philosophy. And she basically said the owl represented the more challenging aspects of philosophy. So it's easy to discuss the tidy, simple philosophical questions. You know, it is tough to wrestle with the messy ones. And that's what I sense, you know, so she came to her own conclusion on what the owl mythology meant. And that was her take on it, is that the owl was the symbol of the more challenging, difficult to categorize philosophical wanderings, and which I think is great. So, and that's exactly what's playing out in the book.
One last thing I have to mention, and this was the first thing I thought of when I saw your webpage, is I'm a fan of David Lynch and Twin Peaks. And one of the recurring quotes in that television show is that the owls are not what they seem.
And I write about visuals of the owls. Yeah, I did a chapter and kind of happy with the way that turned out called Owls and Pop Culture. And I had to address the David Lynch thing. Now, David Lynch is very tight-lipped. He doesn't do the little DVD things at the end where the director, you know, narrates the thing and said, oh, here's my inspiration for this. He won't do that. You know, people are like, gosh, you know, what did you mean by, you know, Mulholland Drive? And he won't answer those questions. So, but he was very, but one of the things he's very clear about is that he meditates a lot. And he gets some of his inspiration from meditation. So here's that's like the shaman who meditates and paints on the cave wall. I mean, that's the same thing in a way that David Lynch is doing. Sure. So, and then also if you look at the calendar of Whitley Strieber's Communion came out, which had what I feel is the first popular, I have not found an earlier reference to owls being specifically tied in to UFO contact. There may be out there. I simply haven't found it. But so that would have been in 1987 was the publication of Whitley Strieber's Communion. He has a story about, you know, having a UFO contact experience. And he got up in the morning and told his wife, like, yeah, I think I saw an owl peeking through the window. And they went up to the window. It was wintertime. It was right around Christmas time. And there was snow on the windowsill and snow on the ledge just outside the window. And there was no tracks in there. So if he had seen an owl, it would have to have left some tracks. There was none. So, you know, there's a spooky, he's a beautiful writer. And so he writes this in this very eerie way. And my sense is that the owls from Twin Peaks can somehow be traced back to that episode in Whitley Strieber's Communion. I don't know who to ask really. I mean, but that's my sense. And also owls have been forever, you know, there's been used as a spooky set piece in Hollywood movies. There's a great scene in The Bride of Frankenstein right at the beginning. Well, this owl shows up and it's right as Frankenstein has like fallen under the mill that he was burned at the end of the prequel of Frankenstein. And then Bride of Frankenstein, they go to the mill and he's down there in the mud under the thing. And there's an owl there with him, which is a great. So, I mean, here's like death and rebirth, the personified Frankenstein, right? Yeah. So, and it's a spooky thing. And it would be, you know, anytime you see like someone's like a spooky scene where they're walking through the woods alone, you're going to hear an owl hooting in the background in a Hollywood movie. So owls already have that spooky lore built in and there's no conspiracy connected to that. That's just how, you know, cobwebs and creaky doors are. There's no conspiracy about them either. So.
All right. So Mike, thank you again so much for being with us today. It's been a real pleasure.
Great. I had a half a cup of coffee before we started talking and I apologize if I was a little bit of a motor mouth, but this was great. This was great.
It was excellent. You did an awesome job. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.